Okay, last week there was no class, we had a l'chaim here, but we are going to start again the laws of Erchin. Last time we just gave an introduction to the laws of Erchin, means a person who donates their value to the Beis HaMikdash, whether it's their body, or their animal, or their property, that we'll soon see. The commentaries explain what is the connection between the curses that we just learned before and this concept of donating things to the Beis HaMikdash. So some learn that the connection is because when a person has problems, you know, there's difficulties in life, like, you know, tzedakah has an important role. Tzedakah tatzel mimavis, the Gemara says, tzedakah saves from death. So therefore the Torah says you want to get rid of the curses that we just learned. The best way of doing it is by donating tzedakah, giving tzedakah. That's what some people say. Okay, some people say, the Baal HaTurim says, a very interesting concept. We'll soon learn the various values of money that people have to give. Altogether, it ends up to be 143 shekels. Altogether, between if you, this age, that age, male, female, like we're going to learn. So he says, between the curses of B'chukosai and the curses of Devarim, of Kisavai, the Teichacha, there's 143 curses. So he says, the connection is, by giving tzedakah of 143 shekels of the soul, if you add them all together, so that will get rid of the 143 curses that it, you know, that existed from before. That's basically what the commentaries explain what the connection is. Okay. Now, what does the Torah say? Kedav Hashem al Meisha Lemer, that Hashem spoke to Meisha. Dabir al Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, v'amart aleim, and say to them the following. Ish ki yafli neder, if a man articulates a vow, be'erkach on the nefashos l'Hashem, regarding the valuation of human life to Hashem. Now, in order for a vow to be valid, you have to articulate it. If you think it, it's not really considered a vow. Even though it does say in Shulchan Aruch that especially when it comes to tzedakah, that even if a person thought something, they really should try, that they don't have an obligation to, but it's better, even if they thought they're going to donate something to the temple or give tzedakah, whatever, even if they just think it, it's still better to do it. But the actual vow is only the only responsibility is kiyafli, when you actually articulate it and you actually say it. Now, there's different ways of doing this. Here the Torah uses the word be'erkecha nefashis, the valuation. When it comes to vows, a lot depends on the language that you say. And normally the rule is, when it comes to making vows, it's what the normal, average person means when they say what they say. Okay? So what happens if somebody says, they don't say, I'm giving the value of myself to the, or the value of somebody else. They come along and they say, I'm giving this person's worth to the Beis HaMikdash. I'm donating his, not his value, his worth. How much money he is. Okay? So the din is, how much money is a person worth? So like we learned in other dinim of the Torah, it goes basically how much they would be sold as a slave on the market. For instance, we learned before in Parshas Mishpatim, there's a din, what happens, God forbid, somebody chops off somebody's hand. So you have to pay damages. Now how do you evaluate the value of a hand? So the din is, you sell them how much you would be sold as a slave with two hands, how much you'd be sold as a slave with one hand, and the difference is how much you have to pay. That's normally. So therefore, if somebody says, as the Gemara's expression is, demei ploni alai, the money of the cash value of so-and-so is what I'm donating to the Beis HaMikdash, so how do you evaluate that? How much he sold on the slave market. How much he sold on the slave market. Here we're talking, a person is not saying that. Okay? What a Jew needs to, if a Jew says erkecha, which means the valuation, not the cash value of the person, 718. Well, how much is the value of myself or the value of somebody else that he's donating to the Beis HaMikdash? Then it doesn't depend on your strength. It doesn't depend on your value. The Torah says, male from this age to this age at this price, female this age to this age at this price. Even by a slave, you know, you can have a stronger slave that sold for more and a weaker slave which is sold for less. In this case, it doesn't go by that. If a person says, Erki alive, my value is what I'm donating to the Beis HaMikdash, what is the value, not the cash value, what is the value of the person? So the Torah says it goes by age and by sex. Male, this and this age, this amount. Female, this amount. That's...
Female more expensive than
the male? We'll soon see. We can keep you in suspense.
Where do they use that? In, like, for instance, if somebody gets hurt or...
No, in this thing is, a guy just donates his value. A guy comes and says, in Hebrew, he says, Erki alive. I'm donating my value to the Beis HaMikdash. Or if a guy would say, I'm donating your value to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Torah says, as we learn the ages, and depending on your age, depending on your gender, that's how much money I would have to donate to the Beis HaMikdash.
And the color?
Huh?
The color?
The color of the person? No, that we don't differentiate.
Why would someone who sell his value? Why wouldn't say...
He's not selling his value. That's what he wants to donate. Let's say a miracle happened to the person. And a person says, you know, God saved my life. I want to give my value, what I'm worth, to the Beis HaMikdash. Or Pinyon HaBen, right. You redemption of the firstborn. Everybody is the same price. Here, it's also, the difference is age and gender. But as far as, and generally speaking, the Mefarshim explained another interesting thing. What's the connection between this and the curses of before? They say two things. Number one, after all the curses before, the way Hashem is really cursing us out, seemingly, a person could say, oy vey, I'm worthless, I'm valueless. Hashem says, listen, doesn't matter, you're still valuable. No matter who you are, you still have a value. Another thing it says, before we admonish somebody else, we should realize that they're God's children and there's a value to them. We just shouldn't belittle anybody else to think they're worthless. You know, every person, no matter who they are, has a value. Doesn't matter what age, what, every person has a value. And people have to understand that. Okay, so then he says like this. Now what's the value, the Torah says? The value goes like this. The value or the assessment of a male, mi ben esrim shana va ben shishim shana, between the age of 20 and 60, v'hoya erkecha, what is the value? Chamishim shekel kesef b'shekel akedish. 50 shkolim of kesef. Now just to give a cheshbon, 5 shekels that we redeemed the firstborn is like 101 grams of silver. So this is 10 times the amount. So it's like over 1,000 grams of silver. Huh? I don't tell you it goes by ounces, but in gold they go by grams, by the way. When they sell gold, they go by grams. Whatever it is, but that's the 50 shekel kesef. So if somebody says, I'm giving my value to the Beis HaMikdash, or I'm giving your value to the Beis HaMikdash, depending on your age. If you're male between 20 and 60, you have to give donate 50 shekel kesef. Vim nekevehi, what happens if the person's a female? V'haya erkecha shleishim shekel. The value is 30 shekel. Okay? You understand the male is 50, the women are the same age. Between 20 and 60, then the male is 50 shekel and the female is 30 shekel. V'imi ben chamesh shanim v'ben esrim shanim. What happens if the age is between 5 and 20? V'hoya erkecha zachar esrim shkolim. The male is worth 20 shekel. And the nekeva, the female, is a seder shkolim, 10 shekel. So it changes in percentages. From 5 to 20, male is 20, woman is 10. From 20 to 60, the male is 50 and the woman is 30. Now, v'imem ben chedesh v'aben chamesh shanim. What happens if a baby is from 1 month old to 5 years old? Then if it's a boy, it's 5 shkolim kesef. You could do opinion a ben. And for the female, that age would be shleisha shkolim kesef, 3 shekel kesef. Okay, this is again, and the mefarshim explained, this is a complete illogic. There's no rationale why this price and why this one. It's basically completely irrational. Now, then the last one is v'imi ben shishim shana v'mayla. What happens if the guy's over 60? Im zachar, if it's a male, v'ya'erkecha chamisha aser shakel, you go down in value. You go down to 15, v'na'rkeva aser shakel, and a girl, 10. The female, 10 shakelim. Okay?
And the male?
The male is 15. Okay. And the girl is 10. The woman is 10. But percentage-wise, the difference between male and female is the least by the older age. So Rashi quotes the famous Gemara that Rashi says that when you have an old man in the house, it's problems. When you have an old woman in the house, it's a blessing. Because an old man can't take care of himself. And an old woman could. So, it says that's why the percentage goes down. Now, just to discuss a few things over here. When a person makes the vow, they have to pay for it right away. You can't make a vow and pay it years later. You have an obligation, the Torah says, you need to pay it ASAP. As soon as possible, you have to pay up this vow that you're making. Now, it says, if you notice, the order is a little funny. The first order, the Torah says, is from 20 to 60. Right? Then the Torah goes 5 to 20. And then it says 1 month to 5 years, and then it goes over 60. So, the Rabbeinu Bechai explains, because most people that make the vow is between 20 and 60. Most people that make that vow, I mean, kids under that age are not possible to make. So they make it, and then next comes over bar mitzvah, and then comes, so to speak, the kids and then the senior citizens. Will make this vow. So this the money that they have to pay for their various ages. But Rashi says an interesting expression. It says like this: when you get older, the woman is closer to the man's value, and therefore he only goes down a third. More than a third, the woman goes down only a third. Okay. And it says, an old man in the house is no good, an old woman in the house is good. So the values change.
What's the value for Pidyon Nefesh?
There is no... Well, what the Torah is talking about over there, Pidyon Nefesh, is God forbid, if somebody's ox gores a person and kills them, so you have to give a certain redemption fee. Which is also a set price. In other words, like this. What is the value of a human being? I mean, science and medical science is trying to... What?
Millions of dollars.
Yeah, I mean, you know...
$2.35 when I was in high school.
How much?
$2.35 when I was in high school.
That's what the medical school said. I mean, it's priceless. Okay? But yet, the Torah does describe... You know, monetary damages or monetary value, like we said before. If a guy says, I'm giving the monetary value of a person, it's how much he would be sold as a slave. Here he's talking in a different sense. He's talking about a person says, my valuation. How much am I worth? Okay? But, you know, it teaches a very interesting thing. Moshe Rabbeinu, if Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm donating my value to the Beis HaMikdash, okay, if he was between 20 and 60, it would be $50, 50 shekels, right? And the biggest Russia, the biggest wicked person would say the same thing, he would have to give the same thing, right? Because if you're talking about the value of a person, the pintali, the essence, the core of the person, there's no difference. Like, 9 Moshe Rabbeinus don't make a minion, and 10 yukels do. You know, you can't put the value on it. So therefore, the Torah comes up with the value that the Torah says, this is how much you have to donate to the Beis HaMikdash. That doesn't mean that that's all you're worth. You know, a person could be a billionaire and also have to give that. Next part we're going to learn, if the guy's too broke even to afford this, is what they should do. But when you're talking about human life, there is no price you could put on it, and therefore the Torah is giving us amounts that the Torah says, this is what you have to donate to the Beis HaMikdash because of it.
Basically, it's creating a measuring unit for the purpose of donating to Beit HaMikdash.
Correct. Right.
Rabbeinu, was it customary people do that?
Yeah. People used to do it. In fact, one second. What happens if somebody says, the value of my hand is upon me? Or if the person would say, he didn't say me, he says, the value of my heart.
What does that mean, the value of my hand is upon me?
In this mitzvah, if a guy says, I'm donating to the Beis HaMikdash the value of my hand. That's what he says. So then it's worthless. Because the Torah is speaking about people. The Torah is not giving a value on a hand. But if somebody donates, says the value of an organ, that without that organ you can't live, then the Mishnah says, then you have to give like a full body. If a guy says, the value of my heart or head, whatever, is being donated to the Beis HaMikdash, because you can't live without it, you have to pay the whole thing. The guy says, the evaluation of my foot, my hand, or, you know, a limb that you could live without, then you don't have to give anything. If he says, the cash value of my hand, then he would have to give how much a hand is worth on the slave market. One, you know, having a hand and not having a hand. So that would be different. But the Torah doesn't recognize, so to speak, partial evaluations. Unless if it's a limb that the whole body needs to live from, so then it's like you said, you donated the whole body. That's the difference.
This part that, Rabbi, you said that you have to pay it as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Is that also same for us, that when we donate or something to the...
Unless if you have a payment schedule.
No. Let's say if I can say, you know what, I want to pay $200, but you know what, if I can wait for the next 6 months, I make more money and I can give more, I'll donate $1,000. Can I do that? Can I have more time?
Yeah. Here, there's a posse, it says like this.
Isn't it possible if someone makes a pledge and it passes an insurance that they didn't pay it?
No, if a person makes a pledge and they pass away, the estate has that obligation.
They know about it.
Obviously, if they know about it. Here. The Torah says like this, later in Chumash Devarim. Ki sida neda l'Hashem, when you make a vow to Hashem, you should not be late in paying it. Why? Ki darish yidrashenu, because Hashem will demand it of you, and you'll be in sin. Okay? So Rashi says, Rashi quotes in the Gemara, you have 3 chagim to pay.
Like a year.
No. If you pledged it right before Pesach, So you have a half a year. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. By Sukkos, you have to pay it. In other words, they used to go up to the Beis Hamikdash three times a year, right? So the Torah says, but the mitzvah is to pay it right away. When did you transgress the sin of, when the Torah says you're delaying it? That is if you kept it for more than three chagim. So if you gave it, donated it right before Tishrei, like right before Rosh Hashanah, you have a whole year to pay it. If you did it right before Pesach, you have 3 months to pay, 6 months to pay it. But that's what the Pasuk says later. That applies when a person makes a neder to Hashem. And the Mefarshim explains the same thing applies in this thing. In this thing also, it's the same way. This is a vow. This is a vow that you're pledging to give the money to the Beis Hamikdash. So the person needs to pay for it. To pay it. Okay, now what happens? Now one more thing. Less than a month, you don't have to pay. Okay, that's the terms. The terms, that's from a month to 5 years, right? 5 years to 20, 20 to 60, and then over 60, no matter what age. Under a month, you don't have to, it's the same concept of why you don't do a pinyan aben until the 31st day. Because until 30 days, there's no established life yet of the person. Until 30 days, after 30, that's when they become established life. So less than that, you can't donate something on a doubt. Because it's a doubt, so you can't donate it on a doubt. So therefore, you wouldn't have the obligation to pay it. And there is no obligation to pay it. But if a hundred-year-old man says, Erki Alai, he has to pay. Like he says, the male is 15 shekel, the woman 10 shekel, and so on.
Technical question.
Yeah.
Could the person that made the vow be reminded to pay his debt?
You mean, do they text him? Email him?
Send him a bill?
In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, I don't think they did that. No, really. The person had the responsibility, it was his responsibility to remember to pay it. Nowadays, you get reminders. Well, you're supposed to get reminders.
It's also the way that somebody sincerely forgets, and it shouldn't, but it's also possible that somebody forgets. So the reminder, there was no reminder. The guy,
is it halakhically correct to remind someone that you're dead?
You should remind them, but I don't remember seeing anywhere that the Beis Hamikdash would send out bills. Because, first of all, they didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
A guy says to himself, a guy lives somewhere in Eretz Yisrael, right? Anywhere. He says, I'm donating my value to the Beis Hamikdash. Nobody even heard it. It's between him and God. So, like, who's supposed to send them a reminder?
But in today's life.
Today's life, it's good to send a reminder because a lot of people just overlook it. It's not that they don't want to. It's just that they forget. Even though the truth is, when somebody owes you money, you don't forget. That nobody forgets.
It can happen as part of shuls when they sell everything and there's like two or three yamim tovim back to back and they sell the rimonim, they sell the sell all sorts of different things and the guy buys different things and
he forgets.
Forgets that maybe the calculation is even could be correct. Incorrect.
Yeah, but here, that you're right, that's in, but what he's talking about here, all I'm saying, this is not a public vow. It's a private vow between him and Hashem. The person forgot, he forgot. I mean, you know, that Hashem will deal with it, how liable the person is for forgetting. But a person has the obligation to do it.
If somebody pledges something, in the meantime they go bankrupt or they have no money, what is it?
The obligation stays when they get money, they have to pay it. But the next pasuk is talking about if somebody is, the one who made a vow is too poor to pay for it. But that's a different story. That's even when he made the vow. Let's say a guy didn't know. He didn't know this law. And the guy says, I'm donating my value to the Beis Hamikdash. So the Torah says, okay, you're this age, $50, 50 shekels. And the guy says, 1 minute, I don't have it. You know, so then the news you bring him to the Kohen does an assessment, a state assessment of how much you're able to pay. Okay? But if somebody has an obligation to pay, see, in Torah law, there's no bankruptcy. Okay, in secular law, in civil law, you have bankruptcy concept. In Torah law, there's no chapter 11, there's no chapter 7. You owe somebody money, you have to pay. You don't have it now, there's a debt. You have an obligation to pay the debt.
Chapter 613.
It's chapter 613, yeah.
But didn't the rabbi learn that if somebody says, I donate this sack of money, and then if God forbid he loses that sack of money, he doesn't owe it anymore, right?
Right.
But if I say, I donate the value of my...
Then you got it no matter what.
You still have to...
You have to pay it.
If God forbid he...
Correct. You know, it's interesting, even in halacha, when you go into the deeper aspects of this, just from a halachic point of view, I cannot sell you something that doesn't exist yet. Okay, the whole commodity market is questionable in the halachic aspect. If I have a tree that doesn't have fruits yet, and I say to you, I'm selling those fruits that didn't grow yet. Okay? The din is, Rav Meir holds, you could, but the halacha is that you cannot sell something that doesn't exist in the world. Okay? Ein odam makna davar shaloi bala oilam. Gemara says. It's a rule. You cannot sell something, I cannot give you something that doesn't exist. You know, if I say, the wife's not pregnant, that they say, when my wife gets pregnant, has a baby, this and this and this and this. It doesn't exist yet.
This property will bring so much income in, let's say, 3 years. Based on that, I value it this much, I sell it at that price.
But then you're selling the land that exists now. You're not selling the profits. You're selling the... But for instance, I'll give you an example. The Gemara says, when you get married, you write a ketubah, right? The ketubah is a financial responsibility. In case, God forbid, there's a divorce or death, he has to pay X amount of money, right? Now, so the Gemara discusses, what happens if the guy's broke? A chassan's getting married, he doesn't have a cent to his name, right? Why isn't that giving something that doesn't exist yet? What's he saying? That God forbid, if something happens, you're going to get X amount of money. Why isn't that something that doesn't exist in the world? So Tosfos in the Gemara explains, because you're binding yourself. You're not binding the money. In other words, I'm binding myself that pay you X amount of money. Okay. Then, because I am in the world, the lien is on me. It's like a lien that I have a responsibility to pay. So I'm legally binding myself to pay you the money, and I'm in the world, so the money is there. Okay? Now, therefore, you could write a ksuba, even though the guy has no money, because he's binding himself when he exists. We learned it then, we discussed it the other week. According to Torah law, let's not get into the issues, women don't own their own property, it all belongs to the husband. Your husband never told you that?
No, you can't say that.
What do you mean you can't say that?
So if the husband and wife have
$5,000... One second. In Talmudic law, okay, the husband and wife, when they get married, okay, it's a joint venture. He has responsibilities, she has responsibilities. Okay? But halachically, the Gemara says, and just hear it out before you scream, before she screams again. Whatever the woman acquires goes to the husband. The husband supports her, therefore whatever she owns goes to the husband. Now there are different properties that she could bring into a marriage. Let's say a woman lost a father and she was an only child, right? So she inherited the father. So she brings in certain types of properties to the marriage. Certain types she keeps the principal and the husband gets the fruits. So sometimes the husband gets, but besides that, in technical halacha, and I'll explain about how that works today, okay? But in technical halacha, whatever a woman has belongs to the husband. A woman has no money of her own. Okay, from a halachic perspective.
And what if her husband does not belong to the woman?
The husband himself belongs to the wife. He's a slave of the wife. Now you feel better? You feel better now? Okay. What happens, therefore, if a woman damages somebody? Okay? Again, in biblical law, it doesn't apply today. In biblical law, if you're a kid under bar bat mitzvah, you're a 10-year-old kid, okay, takes a stone and breaks somebody's window. Okay? In halachic world, in the true biblical sense, the parents don't have to pay. They didn't break the window, the kid did. Kid's not responsible for his actions. There's no money. Okay? That's the halach. Today is different, and I'll explain why in a minute. What happens if a married woman takes a stone and breaks somebody's window? Or she burns down somebody's house, whatever. She causes a damage. The husband is not responsible for what his wife did. Right? But right now she has no money. Okay? What's the halacha? The halacha says it's a debt on the women, on the woman. If she ever gets divorced or the husband dies, that she gets her own property, she has to pay up that debt. It could be 100 years later, 200 years, you know, whatever it is, 10 years later, 15 years later, doesn't matter. She is responsible for her actions. The problem is she has no money. So it's a debt. Whenever she gets the money, she has to pay it. Okay? Now, you can halachically change that. If a husband writes over money to the wife, he gives her money, or somebody, let's say, gives her money on the condition the husband doesn't get it, so then the one has money. Okay, so because in California there's a concept called community property, that the law says that it's 50-50, so it's 50-50. Understand? But I'm saying just in the actual law, today also, in court, if your 10-year-old kid breaks a window, they obligate the parents to pay. Right? You always get these questions from the schools, you know, the kids. They get into a fight, this guy breaks his kid's glasses, and he breaks his toy, and he breaks his this, and then, you know, so if the parents are scholars, you know, he's a kid, he doesn't have to pay, we don't have to pay. You know, today it's different. Today, the halacha says, because the law of the land says you have to pay, so you have to pay.
What happens if a husband and wife, they both have $5,000, it's a community property, the husband comes to the shul and donates $5,000. Goes home and tells the wife that I donated all of our money, and the wife says...
He's a foolish man.
The wife says, half of it was mine. You can't... It's community property, so did he...
If it's community property, he wouldn't be allowed to do it. He would be obligated for $2,500, though.
He would be obligated.
Yeah.
But he made a vow for $5,000.
But half of it, the Torah says you have no right to do. Listen, if I promise money to Beis Hamikdash, say, I give $10,000 of your money to tzedakah. Can I do that?
But he made a vow on his own. Is the obligation is on him as well?
Oh, you mean does he eventually have to pay the $5,000? Yeah. Yeah. He would have to pay the $5,000. Yeah. But right now, he can't pay the whole $5,000 because if it's her money, $2,500, right? Then he can't pay it because it's not his money. It's like me saying, I'm donating $10,000 of your money to tzedakah. I mean, it's worthless. It doesn't work. It would be good for rabbis to do that, but take everybody's money, but it wouldn't work. Halachically, it can't work. Okay, so now the Torah says like this. Pasuk 8, Ches. What happens if the person that made the vow is too poor to pay the full amount? Okay? And again, it doesn't matter if he promised his value or somebody else's value, it doesn't matter. So what's the Torah say to do? You put him in front of the Kohen, okay? The Kohen evaluates him. Based on what the person making the vow can afford, the Kohen assesses him. But there's a lot of details in this din. Okay? Now, what happens, and this is an interesting thing, what happens if I vowed your money, your value to the Beis HaMikdash, and I can't pay it? I didn't take your money. I said, I'm donating your value to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? So now, who stands in front of the coin? I can't pay it. So what do? It's like a tuition committee. You stand before the tuition committee and they assess how much you're able to pay. Who is it? But again, it's your value that I can't pay. Okay? So normally, it says like this. According to Rashi, that person is brought to the Kayin. Meaning, according to Rashi, somebody made a vow to give, he comes to the Kayin. He vowed to give somebody, that person is brought to the Kayin. This is how I mean to be Rashi and Rambam. Rashi says, if I made I donated my value to the Beis HaMikdash and I can't pay it, I'm too poor, I come to the Kayin, he assesses me. If I donated your value, so he goes to the Kayin to assess how much I should pay. But the Rambam says, no, in both cases, the guy that made the vow, he has to come to the Kohen, because it's his obligation to pay. Right? He has to pay it. Whether it's my value or your value, but I made the vow, I have to pay it. So he has to come to the Kohen, and he says, it doesn't matter, whatever it is. Okay? Now, the Ravid learns only the guy that made the vow has to come. Okay? Now, what happens, and here's an interesting halacha, what happens if the guy that made the vow is not able to stand before the Kohen? He's dying. So the Gemara says, the fact that the Torah says in order to assess him, you have to stand in front of the Kohen to be assessed. What happens if he cannot be brought to the Kohen, he's dying? Then there's no assessment.
No obligation.
Right.
Rabbeinu, is this any Kohen or Kohen Gadol?
A regular Kohen, any Kohen. Now, the din is, by the way, they bring down that what does he have to pay? It says like this. Okay, it excludes, when you say how much he's able to pay, it excludes living quarters, tools that he did to work with, and clothing are not included in this. Only his free assets, which are extra, that's how much he has to be assessed. Even if it's one nickel, so to speak, and that's all he has extra, that's all he would have to pay. So Torah's really kind over here, you know. The guy makes a vow, and he says whatever the value is. So Torah says like this. This is the normal price of the value, depending on age and gender. And if not, the Torah says you come to the Kohen, he assesses you how much money you're able to pay, and that's what you pay. Years ago, in the shtetls, by the way, when they taxed people for the various taxing, the way it works is, he came in front of the committee of the city, Zayin Tuva Yair, the city board, and they said, you pay this, you pay this, you pay this, you pay this, and certain taxes, everybody was the same. But let's see, money for Pesach, you know, for the poor people, they would assess each person individually how much you have to pay. It's like a tuition committee today.
Now they they just send you a bill and then they send a company to go after it.
The tuition.
Yeah. They give it to another company.
Collection agency.
The collection agency.
Yeah.
And he comes and he gets all of those chips from you.
Or else they take away your house.
And then they charge the school 4%.
Interest.
No, not interest.
I know. Yeah, but that's what they have to do. If you pledge money, you have an obligation to pay it.
Are these laws only for the time of Beit HaMikdash or for this?
No, they don't apply today. But even then, remember last time or 2 weeks ago we discussed, there are certain things that you're donating the value of it, and certain times you're giving it as a carbon. Okay? If a guy says, I want to give this animal to the Beit HaMikdash, and the animal is kosher for a sacrifice, okay, it has to be brought as a sacrifice. What happens if a guy says, the foot of this bird, I'm consecrating as a sacrifice. Okay? So the din is, what do? So you sell it to a guy that needs a sacrifice, and he brings that bird. Sometimes you're donating monetary value. Like if a person says, I'm donating my value to the Beis HaMikdash, so then it was a monetary value, so that was given to the Beis HaMikdash to use for Bedek HaBayis, as it's called, for just the general expenses that they had. Okay, then Pasuk Tes. Now it speaks about if a person donates animals to the Beis HaMikdash, okay? If it's a kind of animal that one would be allowed to bring, meaning it has no blemishes, even sacrifices have to be a certain age. Sometimes the Torah says 1 year old, sometimes 2 years old, the birds are the animals. But it was a kosher carbon. Then, any part of it that you can give to Hashem, Yakedish will be holy. Meaning, it must be offered for that purpose. Okay, then the Pasuk says, what happens is, like we just said, if somebody sanctifies a leg as a carbon elov, only the leg becomes holy, not the rest of the animal. Okay? Now, the problem is, what are you going to use this bird for? You can't use this bird for anything else because the foot has to be brought as a carbon. So like you said, what do you do? You have to sell it to somebody who needs to bring a carbon, and then they bring this animal as a carbon.
You sell it, and you donate that money. Is that what it is? The foot?
No. If you donate it, then that animal has to be brought as a carbon. But no, the interest again. The Gemara says it also depends what limb. A chicken can live without a leg. So if somebody dedicates a leg as a sacrifice, only the leg becomes holy. The rest of the animal isn't. What happens if somebody sacrifices the heart of the animal or the head of the animal? Then automatically the whole animal becomes holy. And the whole animal has to be brought as a carbon. The din is, if the gift is able to be brought as a sacrifice, it has to be brought as a sacrifice. Otherwise, it's just a monetary value. There is an opinion in the Gemara, and that's the halacha, that even if you make a leg of the animal holy, the whole animal becomes holy, as a carbon. So whatever it is, you have to give it completely to the Beis HaMikdash. And then the Torah says like this, Lo yachlifen, is a very interesting mitzvah. You cannot exchange it, or you can substitute it for good or for bad, or bad for good. I'll explain in a second. What happens if you do substitute one animal for the next? Both become holy. And there's a very famous Rambam over here explaining this din. But first let me explain what the din is. A guy has a bird that he donated to the Beis HaMikdash. And he says, you know what? I'm going to exchange it for another bird. Instead of this bird, I'll exchange it for another bird. The Torah says, if you do that, both become holy. Both become holy. Even if it's bad or for good, you know, your chicken's $10 and you say, okay, I'm going to substitute it for $12 chicken or $10 for $8 chicken. Good or bad or bad or good, the halacha is both become holy. So if you substitute it or you exchange it, the Torah says it is. So the question, what's wrong? Why can't they exchange it? What's wrong with exchanging it? So I want to, instead of this one, I want to give this one. You know, seemingly then this will become non-holy. Look, for instance, what happens if I donate a table to the Beis HaMikdash? Right? The table becomes a part of the Beis HaMikdash. They don't need a table. So what do they do? What does the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash do? You need a table, they'll sell you the table for $100. The table becomes unholy, and now the money becomes holy. But that's the way it works. By sacrifices, the Torah said it doesn't work like that. If you have a sacrifice and you want to substitute it or exchange it, you're not allowed to. It's a sin to exchange. And if you did, both become holy.
Are they saying this specific bird, or they're just saying, like, for instance,
this bird.
This is specific.
Yeah. The guy takes this bird, he consecrates this bird as a sacrifice. Yeah? So I'm bringing this bird as a carbon. Then a minute later he says, you know what? No, I want to give this one instead. And not give this one. Torah says, you're not allowed to do it. And if you do, they both become holy. So Rambam explains, what's the reason for this?
Because it's a done deal. Like you said.
Why can't I trade for a better one?
No, you said that even if that becomes, is not kosher or something, it has a blemish or something, that's even accepted. It's accepted.
No, monetarily. Then they could sell it, and that becomes unholy. This is only speaking animals that could be used as a sacrifice.
Right.
Then you cannot exchange it, and if you do, both become holy. In the next pasuk, it's going to say what happens if the animal is not holy. I mean, it's impure. It's a treif animal. Okay?
So if it's not holy, but if you pointed it, it says this animal, if it's not holy, it's your donation is still accepted.
Right. But now, what does the Beis HaMikdash do with that animal? What do they do with it? They
sell it.
What happens? The animal becomes unholy, and the money becomes holy.
Right.
Okay. By a sacrifice, you can't do that. If it's a kosher sacrifice, and you pledged it, and then you decided to change it, they both become holy. Why? So the Rambam says like this. The Torah knows a person's Yetzirah very well. A guy's going to start playing games. He's going to donate something, you know, when he's in a good mood. He's going to donate a good animal. Then he's going to cool down a little bit. He says, you know what? No, I mean, not this animal. Let me give this animal instead. Torah says, uh-uh. Don't play games with God. You donated something? What? The Torah says, even if you want to give a better one, it's no good. The Torah says, one day will be a better one, one day will be a worse one. You know, people play the games. So the Rambam says, the Torah yorda l'seiv daita shel adam. That's the Rambam. The Torah goes into the depth of the person's mind and knows that the Yetzer Hara likes to do things. And people, it's human nature. Huh?
Yeah.
It's always human nature. You start off going something, you promise the best, and then all of a sudden you think to yourself, big deal, it's a bird, change it. Torah says, don't play games with God. Don't play games with God. You say something, you have to keep it. Even to make a better animal, you're not allowed to. Because now you make a better animal, another time you make a worse animal. So there's no exchanging. It is what it is, and it stays holy.
If you want to make it better animal, it means that
also
what
not.
You selected, you're decreasing the value of what you have selected originally. Is that what you
No, mean? You want to donate more. This animal that you gave was $10, now you want to give $20 animal.
Right.
You can't do that either.
Why?
Because one day you'll do it this way, and the other day you'll do it from 20 down to 10. So Torah says, don't play games. You know, no, this is a rule. In fact, he says, he may wish to retrieve it by substituting an inferior animal for the Torah penalize him. The same penalty even if it applies if he substitutes a better animal. Because people are permitted to substitute in some circumstances, they might feel free to do so in other cases as well. Okay? The Torah says, not only that, the Torah says another din. When you want to redeem something of the Beis HaMikdash, that you want to redeem, you have to pay an additional fifth. Not even if it's a quarter. You have to pay an additional quarter just to be able to redeem something. Because the Torah doesn't like, you know, Torah likes straight things. No playing games. You donated it, that's what it is. Don't make it better, don't make it worse. This is what you said, keep to your words.
Do what you say and you say what you mean.
Yeah, say what you
mean. That's only in the case of Korban, but in the case of a chair or anything else, you could substitute it, right?
You have to give it to the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash sells it.
But
this is only about sacrifices.
What if you decide to change the chair later and say, I don't want this chair, I want to give this chair? You could do that, right?
Yes.
So how come you couldn't make a deal in that case and not this case?
No, because over there, you're donating the money. The money, you have to give the same value.
No, I'm giving the chair, not the money.
No. If you say, I'm going to give this chair, okay?
You substitute it?
No, because again...
But you just said you could.
Right. But over there, it's the value of the chair that you could.
No, you know what?
By sacrifices, it's not the value.
I want to donate this. I say, I donate this. I'm not saying it, but let's say somebody says, I donate a phone, a specific phone, and then tomorrow says, you know what, not this one, I give the other phone. You could do that.
Only if it's the same value.
Okay, but you could do that.
If it's the same value.
But you could do it.
You know, the difference is, that's what I'm saying. By sacrifices, so you're donating the object, and here you're donating the value. By a korban, when I say this animal is consecrated to the Beis HaMikdash, and it's able to be used as a korban, the din is, then, the body of the animal has to be brought as a korban.
Exactly.
Over there, you can start playing games.
Exactly.
This body, that body, the both bodies.
The explanation is not that. It shouldn't be the explanation. Should not be that you cannot play games. Probably the explanation is because you cannot change the korban. Because in other cases, you could make a deal. But in this specific case, the case of
you korban, can make a deal, so because you're not donating the korban. You're not donating the animal. You're not donating the phone. When you donate a phone to the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash doesn't need your phone. What are you donating to the Beis HaMikdash? The value of the phone. If it's $20, it's $20. What are you going to say? I want to give another phone. It's either $20 or not $20.
No, I understand what you're saying, but you see, the explanation that you made for the reason of not being able to substitute was that you couldn't make a deal. But in this case, you can make a deal. So the explanation is wrong.
No, it's not because you can't make a deal. We're afraid a person will start changing for inferior things. But by a phone, you can't say an inferior phone, because when you say, I'm giving this phone, whatever the value of the phone is, that's what you promised. You didn't promise a phone. You promised $20. So you can't come along the next day and give an $18 phone. If I promise $20 to the Beis HaMikdash, can I give 18? No, you have to give 20. But here I'm saying this animal is a sacrifice. It's not money value. So over there, if you're going to change it for a different animal, the different animal might be less money, but you see, it's still a bird, I'm still bringing it as a carbon. You're not talking about money then. You're talking about a donation of a sacrifice. Over there, the Torah says, we don't want you to start changing for less valuable or inferior things. But by other things, you're donating the value, you're not donating the object.
How about better? Instead of bringing a sheep, bringing an ox.
You're not allowed to. Both become holy. That's what the Torah says. In all cases, both become holy.
You say both become holy, you bring both of them?
Yeah.
So what we learn from this, not to play games.
Not with God, for sure not. Even though God plays games with us, but we shouldn't play games with Him.
So if one says, I'll bring this sheep to Beit HaMikdash,
they have to bring that sheep.
And that sheep dies?
Then you don't have to bring another one. But if a guy says, I'm going to bring a sheep, not this sheep, a sheep,
right.
So again, the obligation is on him,
correct.
Not on the animal.
can you bring ox instead?
No.
More expensive.
No. No. Okay.